is episode 7, The Truth About Vaccines 2020, Natural Immunization, Homeoprophylaxis, and Fundamental Freedom of Choice.
The Truth About Vaccines. This is our 7th and final episode. How do you feel about forced vaccinations? Are you familiar with the term homeoprophylaxis? Both of these topics and many more will be covered in tonight's final episode. I hope you enjoy it. We begin this final episode with some valuable information on homeoprophylaxis, which is HP for short. It's basically the equivalent of homeopathic immunization. In homeopathy, the phrase like to cure like is often used. The basic theory is that any substance which can produce symptoms in a healthy person can cure similar symptoms in someone who's sick.
Homeoprophylaxis has been around for over 200 years, and it's really about the use of what we call nosodes in homeopathy, and they're made from disease products or animal, mineral, or vegetable products as the source, and then they're diluted and potentized so there's no original molecules left in the substance. But what we have is an energetic frequency of that substance, and when that's introduced into the human system, it basically educates the immune system so that the person can recognize the disease if met in nature and build an immune response, an appropriate immune response. So it's very safe. There's no additives, there's no adjuvants, there's no preservatives. These are not grown on foreign mediums. No antibiotics. There's never been a death from homeoprophylaxis. It's been utilized worldwide very, very effectively, and a number of different studies have taken place that have confirmed its effectiveness and safety.
I've got ways to address and sensitize the immune system much safer than the injection of toxic medicaments that if you put in a baby's bottle and had them drink it, you could be arrested for attempted murder. But they inject it and say, oh, it's fine. So we utilize something called homeoprophylaxis at home. You know, my kids have not been vaccinated, and they've never even had antibiotic because we have a different way to look at the body and support immunity. And homeoprophylaxis uses homeopathic forms of diseases or disease processes. We call these things nosodes, N-O-S-O-D-E, or nosodes. And this is a safe way. You can take a killed form of a pathogenic material, if you will, viruses, bacteria, fungal species, and safely address them by serial dilution and succussion into a homeopathic form, and then administer them orally, typically, and you can sensitize the immune system without devastating it, gently putting the signaling in. And in this case, you can see prevention, and there have been studies that have shown that this is efficacious as diseases drop. You know, I think it was leptospirosis in Cuba that they had done the nosodes because they couldn't get the vaccine. And it was an inadvertent study analysis that kind of put a very embarrassing mark on the vaccine belief that it takes substances at toxic levels, albeit small, but still toxic in my opinion, levels into the body. They were using nosodes and found it prevented the disease much more efficiently with no adverse effects.
Dr. Isaac Golden talked to us about the Cuban study where in Cuba, where they have leptospirosis, it's an endemic disease that occurs during the hurricane season. So high rain and flooding, people are able to contract leptospirosis. So they immunized their entire country for leptospirosis. And in 2007 and 8, there were multiple hurricanes that came through. They weren't able to immunize everyone. And they utilized homeoprophylaxis then and had incredible results with 2.3 million people in a few different regions. And what they found was a reduction of the incidence of leptospirosis, while in the other regions there was an increase in the incidence of lepto. So highly successful study at that time. And then Isaac also did a study with about 3,000 children in Australia, where he gave those children the prophylaxis for the common diseases on the recommended list: pertussis, measles, mumps, and he studied those children for 15 years. So he looked at their long-term health over a period of 15 years and found that they had fewer colds, fewer sore throats, fewer ear infections, that they had better general immunity and health just as a process of receiving these nosodes. He compared those children to some other groups, vaccinated, unvaccinated, and found much better results with those children.
So the nosodes we can use in a few ways. One of them I like is in place of, although a lot of folks get a little up in arms about saying that, but the concept of vaccination as it's from Jenner's time forward has been applied as abhorrent, the way they do it. I'm not opposed to stimulating antibody production gently, safely, but I would do it homeopathically with the nosodes. You can also, in some ways, reduce the potential toxicity for those that feel like they're trapped and they've got no way out. Mm-hmm. Prepare their body perhaps to have a lesser incidence or intensity of an adverse event. I'm not saying that I would guarantee that, but if push came to shove, I would have you use a nosode prior to a vaccine. But the other way is to detoxify from previous vaccines. You can use nosodes or the actual vaccine material and convert it into a homeopathic form, which is not technically a nosode in the same way, but it can sensitize the system to start throwing out some of the damage, the initial insult and assault to the body, even decades before, to undo some of that damage after the fact. I mean, I'd rather not have to undo damage that's caused, if you understand what I'm saying, but we have a lot of people that are damaged and injured. So that's another protocol technique to help detoxify from the adverse impact that the vaccines initially kind of unleashed.
Homeopathic immunizations, or homeoprophylaxis, HP, is the use of potentiated substances called nosodes in a systematic manner to prevent the development of the characteristic symptoms of disease. HP is produced from the actual disease, much like the concept in vaccines. The difference lies in the degree of attenuation or weakening of the original antigen. With HP, the source material is diluted until no original molecules remain. The substance is rendered harmless and has become energetic as opposed to material. This diluted solution is then anointed onto pellets and taken orally. The energetic frequency delivers information to the recipient, familiarizing him or her with the disease pattern. When later encountered in nature, the disease is either not contracted at all or, if contracted, addressed effectively with a mature, natural immune response. Dr. Robert Scott Bell and Cilla Watcott both mentioned the Cuba study. In that study, where homeoprophylaxis was used on 2.3 million people, the conclusion of the authors was that this approach was associated with a large reduction of disease incidence and control of the epidemic. The results suggest the use of homeoprophylaxis as a feasible tool for epidemic control. Further research is warranted. In the Republic of India, there are several states where homeoprophylaxis is the government-approved treatment and even preventative of many diseases.
50 years back, exactly the 50 years back, there was the government of Kerala approved homeopathy as a system of medicine, officially approved. And later on, they started a department of homeopathy for the treatment of people. Through this department, free treatment is given to the people.
Free treatment?
Yeah, of course. Once a person comes, he will have to pay 2 rupees. For the registration, it's only for the namesake, then lifelong free treatment will be given, medicines, and also prophylaxis will be given. Because in our department, we have a special body called REACH, Rapid Action Epidemic Control Cell Homeopathy. Through this, we give prophylaxis anytime, not only during epidemic, even for endemic diseases, or even for diseases that may appear, for example, tuberculosis, pertussis, any other disease, we give on regular basis homeopathic prophylaxis. Everywhere, the government has got different levels of treatment. For example, the state government, we have a local government, local finance government, the panchayat, the taluk. So, in every government sector, there will be one homeopath who will be invited for the meet, for planning of health policies and all. A homeopath will be invited and his opinion is given great importance. So we have the right to say what to give. They will ask, the ministers will ask what homeopathy can do. So we get it, of course, we get a good support. And even many modern medical doctors support us.
In 1999, there was a very big epidemic. And the efforts of the homeopaths were required in large number. Then the government, the allopathic modern medicine department, they said that we are helpless in this particular situation. So the government gave an order that all allopathic network has to cooperate with homeopaths in distributing this medicine. Government brought an order. And the health minister of that particular state was a medical doctor. She was a gynecologist. And the chief minister said, if you want to continue as a health minister, you have to control this disease. Then she called for a meeting of all allopaths and homeopaths. Then they said, allopaths, we have to import the vaccine from China or Korea. It takes a long time. Even if we import also, we can't say whether this vaccine will be effective in controlling this particular episode of Japanese encephalitis. Then homeopaths were asked, can you do anything? That was the time I was also present in the meeting. Then already I have an experience of treating the cases. Then I have shown a particular case how effective this particular medicine, that's evidence-based medicine. We have a huge network of around 500 homeopathic government dispensaries, it means the clinics, right. All of them. Apart from that, 1500 primary health centers of allopathic network, everybody provided this particular one. That's how we could reach to 20 million of children in a short span. Yes. Otherwise, it would not have been possible. That's how almost 20 million children were covered with homeopathic medicines. By 2000, the cases were almost 1/4. In 2002-03, and almost cases started coming down from 3 digits to single digit. By 2004, there was neither mortality nor morbidity out of this particular one. Here, very interesting point is only the state of Andhra Pradesh gave this BCT, whereas other states, neighboring states like Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, Uttar Pradesh, they were also equally affected by this Japanese encephalitis. Still, the mortality is very high in those states. Only in Andhra Pradesh it has come down. The government of India, now it has taken up a massive project of implementing the same strategy in other states.
It's encouraging that in the Republic of India, classically trained medical doctors work hand in hand with homeopaths and natural doctors in order to ensure that the patients, mostly children, get the best possible outcome. Another crucial piece of the overall health puzzle for infants is breastfeeding.
For babies who are most likely to be affected by bacterial diseases, breastfeeding is what really fends off those infections. For example, in Sweden, it has been shown that the risk of meningitis, hip meningitis, was down fourfold in breastfed, in exclusively breastfed babies. And the whole reason why meningitis even rose was because of the switch from breastfeeding to formula feeding that happened in the second half of the 20th century.
Really?
Yes. Instead of reversing meningitis by introducing breastfeeding or by encouraging breastfeeding, they, of course, what they did, they introduced the vaccine for it.
Okay.
So even though hip meningitis in infancy is the problem of under breastfeeding, the solution was not really to reverse that naturally, but get the pharmaceutical product for it.
Why do you think that is?
Why? Well, I guess there's no money in encouraging anyone to breastfeed, but there's a lot of money in making vaccine.
If we want to practice evidence-based medicine, and if we want to do what is absolutely 100% the best for our children, we have to support women in exclusively breastfeeding. It is absolutely crucial that babies, that human babies, drink human milk. And that's a hard thing to say, and it's a hard thing for some people to hear, because there are a lot of moms who have trouble breastfeeding. Just because it's good for you, just because it helps you, doesn't mean it's easy. So I just want to put that out there, that but But we have literally thousands of studies that show that breastfeeding, exclusive breastfeeding, is absolutely crucial for lifelong health.
It is so important to have a vaginal birth through a healthy birth canal that's teeming with good bacteria that then become the beginning of that child's gut flora. You have a C-section in a sterile environment, you're in a hospital where there's hospital-acquired organisms, and that becomes your flora, and you get C. diff, and you're pooping blood and mucus, and that's not a good start. And in fact, the best way to cure those poor kids is get good probiotics and get that going.
Probiotics are essential to restore gut flora and balance the immune system. This is very important, especially if a child experienced an adverse reaction to a vaccine. Another ancient remedy that's been used for centuries as a method of providing natural immunity is essential oils. Here's Dr. Eric Zielinski describing how essential oils were even used to combat the bubonic plague.
It's an unbelievable story about taking oils like cinnamon, clove, eucalyptus, lemon, rosemary together and combining them in such a way where the vapors actually themselves combat the volatile organic compounds from the plague, from the virus. We actually see research, a very similar blend was researched recently, a clinical trial that actually shows it kills the flu virus. Just flat out, it kills. And again, clove, cinnamon, eucalyptus, rosemary, you all work together. It's a synergy. It's a synergistic effect, and they combat viruses. I found this 1911 book from the Carnegie Library that started talking about essential oils with everything from pertussis, whooping cough, and pneumonia, and just infectious disease. And in the early 20th century, that's all that they used. I mean, that's what they used. In World War I, World War II, they were using oregano and thyme to combat gangrene infection on the battlefield. So what happened? Well, we look at it, well, antibiotic happened. And the government and Big Pharma said, look, we got a solution. And it's cleaner, you don't have to smell like pizza, and it's very simple, and it's cheap. Take a pill. And some people are like, okay, makes sense. Well, that changed the paradigm. Yeah. When the antibiotics came out, that changed the whole paradigm. That's the reason why we're in the situation that we're in today, if you look at it historically. Mm. That was the medicine, especially European doctors. Yeah. You know, Dr. Valnet from France, that's what they used. And so aromatherapy wasn't, in quote, invented until the early 20th century, when René Gadefous burned his hand in a laboratory experiment. And the story goes, he was just frantic looking for something to help relieve his hand, and he saw a big vat of oil. He put his hand in there, it was lavender oil, just to help relieve it. He would have put it in anything. He was surprised at how quickly it healed and how there was no scarring. He's like, what in the world, what was that? They were just experimenting lavender oil. Well, it allowed him, it really opened up his eyes to look at the healing properties of lavender and other things, and that's where he wrote a book called Aromatherapy. And that was a French book. That now that's where we know what we do today based off of his studies now 100 years ago. Aromatherapy is the usage of the therapeutic use of essential oils. And there are three different ways you can use essential oils. Aromatically, and that is through a diffuser. You can apply them in a nebulizer or an inhaler. You know, like a steam, sort of steam sauna with eucalyptus, perfect. Also a topical. You could apply essential oils topically or you can ingest them, which is a debated topic, but if done safely and wisely, it's very effective. Got some stuff on pneumonia too, because essential oils have been shown, thymol, carvacrol, geraniol, citronellol, these are the chemicals in oils like lemongrass, oregano, thyme, yeah, and thymol, thyme, geraniol, rose. These are oils that have been proven to kill pneumonia. So what we see with whooping cough specifically is going back to the research that we see in 1911, they were using they were injecting a 20% dilution in almond oil. So they had sweet almond oil and a 20% dilution of camphor. I mean, it knocked whooping cough in its pants. So camphor also is a main chemical in rosemary. So rosemary is a very common oil. And so what that means, folks, if your son or your daughter is battling whooping cough, even using it aromatically, but again, what's in that blend we talked about? Cinnamon, clove, rosemary, eucalyptus. I mean, they figured out how to kill the bubonic plague. Those oils are also effective against whooping cough as well.
Essential oils are most definitely time-tested medicine, and they help support natural immunity and the entire immune system. Macrophages are important cells of the immune system that are formed in response to an infection or accumulating damaged or dead cells. They're large, specialized cells that recognize and engulf and destroy target cells. Here's Dr. Marco Ruggiero discussing GCMAF and Rerum and how they can be used to activate macrophages and even treat autism.
GCMAF is an acronym for GC, globulin-derived macrophage activating factor. MAF stands for macrophage activating factors. Macrophages are cells of the immune system, and I was working on these cells when I was at the NCI, National Cancer Institute, in the early 90s. And one of my first papers on macrophages is published in PNS with many other colleagues. So it's a topic that I have been studying for the past 26 years. And there are many proteins or factors that may activate macrophages. And Japanese researchers worked, because now he's retired, in Philadelphia, identified another protein called GCMF. Now, this GCMF activates macrophages, and therefore we can define this protein as immune stimulant. And I began working with this Japanese doctor, whose name is Nobuto Yamamoto, in the late 2009-2010, and we published a paper that we presented at the World AIDS Conference in Vienna in 2010, postulating that stimulation of the immune system could eradicate HIV infection. Actually, using the same words of Professor Luc Montagnier when he says that if you have a good immune system, you can get rid of the virus in weeks. So we published together this paper and we kept on working on this molecule. Then I began collaborating with a biotech company in England, and at the first GCMAF conference, immunology conference, held in Frankfurt, Germany, I had the honor and privilege to meet Dr. Jeff Prestreet. Now, Dr. Jeff Prestreet had a good idea in those days. He knew that at least some forms of autism are associated with viral infections, mostly latent viral infections, but he knew that there was a relationship between multiple viral infections, or in general infections, and autism. So it was known that in autism there is a dysregulation of the immune system. So he thought that to try to rebalance the immune system of autistic children with GCMF could have been a good idea. And so this is what he did, and he published his first paper on this topic, I think in 2013, describing how treating children with GCMF improved some serological markers, but also, and this is most important, improved the symptoms. So he began his research on this protein. And we kept on doing our own research in the laboratory. And the more we studied this protein, and the more we published on the effects of this protein on cancer cells, on macrophages, and so on, the more we understood that the protein in itself was not the most important or the most active part of the molecule. So by studying the molecular structure of GCMF, we found out that the active sites were essentially four different things, four different molecules. One was a molecule called alpha-N-acetylgalactosamine. Now, that is the molecule, by the way, removed by an enzyme that is called nagalase. And then we have vitamins of the D group, D2 and D3, a fatty acid whose healthy properties had been known for centuries, oleic acid, the basic principle of olive oil, and this was our major contribution to the field, a glycosaminoglycan, that is a complex sugar called chondroitin sulfate. Now, this chondroitin sulfate is the molecule which mediates the activation of macrophages. In other words, the GCMF does not activate macrophages in and by itself. It does so through the interposition of this sugar that is called chondroitin sulfate. At that point, we were asked by Dr. Prestreet if we could develop a molecule that was not extracted from human blood as the old GCMF was, that was not a protein, because protein, they have a series of difficulties to be handled, that had the same power, the same activity of GCMF. So we began researching, we began studying, we began doing experiments in the laboratory, and we ended up with a new molecule that actually is not new at all. It is what happens in nature. And because of this, we gave a Latin name that means about nature, rerum. In Latin, rerum means of things, and it refers to the essay by the Roman philosopher of 2,000 years ago, Titus Lucretius, who wrote an essay entitled De Rerum Natura, which means about the nature of things. This rerum is nothing else than the active parts of the old GCMF without the GCMF in itself. It had been demonstrated that autistic children have a very, very low level of TGF-beta. Whatever it means, it is not a good thing, because control children, they had normal level, and autistic children, they have a much lower level of TGF-beta. If you treat those children with GCMF, you do not raise the level of TGF-beta, remains the same. You have a number of good effects, no doubt about this, in particular on the endocannabinoid system, but not on TGF-beta. With Rerum, TGF-beta goes up to normal levels after only 5 weeks of treatment. That's why doctors all over the world, to name one, Dr. Nicola Antonucci, who will speak tonight, this afternoon, are reporting results of children who already had benefits from GCMF, but not yet 100%. Let's say with GCMF they had gone from 20 to 60%. Now they add Rerum, now they use Rerum because GCMF is no longer available, and they are completely in a good shape.
Wow.
So this means that it does what all the old GCMF did, plus more, just like a jet plane. It flies like the old propeller plane did, but more. Even though we are very proud of the Rerum, nevertheless, don't think that the Rerum is the miracle pill. Rerum has to be integrated into a protocol. That is a protocol that takes into account first and foremost nutrition. If you eat junk food, don't expect the Rerum to do miracles. It won't do them. So first of all, control the nutrition. And the best nutritional approach for autism is the so-called ketogenic diet, a diet very, very low in carbohydrates and very high in healthy anti-inflammatory fats like olive oil or coconut oil, and amino acids, crystallized amino acids that do not overload the kidneys or the liver. So the ketogenic diet has to be the basis. On top of that, you can reconstitute the microbiome with probiotics. So we develop one that is called Bravo Probiotic, for example. And on top of that, you can add the Rerum to rebalance the immune system and to rebalance also the immune system inside the brain and protect the neurons. But what I'm saying is that do not look for the magic pill. Doesn't exist. If you don't fix nutrition first, if you don't fix your gut, your microbiome, then the Rerum or anything else will do poorly. But if you do this under the supervision of a good and competent doctors, and there are very many, let me tell you, there are very many good doctors, both in the United States and elsewhere, then you can expect very good results.
27, minute 27 ending.